Hi everyone, my name is Ulubaletu Dube and welcome to another episode of In Focus. So we're currently at BHF and we've had some amazing talks, and one of the people we actually got a chance to listen to was Michelle. Michelle, if you don't mind just giving us a brief introduction about yourself.
Hi, yeah, sure, no problem. My name is Michelle Bienica. I am the BHF's company secretary, but I'm also an attorney in private practice. And yeah, that was me.
So you gave a talk at the BHF about the succession planning for boards. Do you mind just touching on what that topic was about? Just giving an overall, like just a high level summary of that conversation.
Yes, I think from a BHF perspective, there's a governance workshop that is scheduled every single year. And increasingly, there's more and more attendance of that workshop, predominantly because governance is quite a challenge in the industry. Okay. And the reason for that is that the Medical Schemes Act is quite opaque in terms of governance. All that it requires, there's effectively one section, Section 57 of the Act, that deals with governance in boards. And it just says the Board of Trustees must be fit and proper to manage the business of a medical scheme. So what I discussed was practical strategies on how to achieve board succession planning, given the limitations of the Medical Schemes Act in the context of King IV.
Okay. Does the Act actually talk about anything more specific about what they mean by fit and proper?
Actually, that's the biggest gap. And so what you do have is a lot of people are looking to the financial sector, this financial services sector, and there are certain guidelines there as to fit and proper, but not specifically in the Medical Schemes Act.
Okay.
And medical schemes are very different creatures to a pension fund. They're very analogous to a pension fund, very different from a pension fund. So I don't necessarily think you could always just apply the same provisions. Okay. And that's specifically because in a pension fund environment, what you're doing is you're managing the money of the members of the pension fund. It's still their money at the end of the day that gets paid over. Whereas a medical scheme, there's case law, the Genesis case, talks about the fact that actually a medical scheme is like an insurance company, actually.
Yes.
Okay, and that the contributions that you're paying are like premiums. And so it provides risk cover effectively for any claims that you may have, healthcare claims that you may have. So it isn't exactly the same, and it may not necessarily, the requirements may not 100% apply. I think in the industry, some people apply it, but it's quite different amongst people and how they apply it and how they interpret those provisions. So there's no set rules like you have in the financial sector.
That's actually quite interesting. I'm guessing that has resulted in a lot of different ways in which people have approached it. Would you like to share maybe some ways that you would think would be an appropriate way to approach that kind of situation? Because there is no clear definition of what people should be doing.
Sure. I mean, I think the thing is what you should be looking at. So in South Africa, King IV is kind of the standard best practice of corporate governance. So that should inform certain provisions and how you deal with it in a medical schemes environment. I also think that a lot of King was pulled into the Companies Act and the amendments to the Companies Act that came into effect on the 1st of May 2011. Okay. And a lot of those provisions, I love the Companies Act. I actually think it's like the idiot's guide to running a company and governance, you know. But it's brilliant because it actually is quite instructive on how to deal with things. It's not expecting people to come up with ideas by themselves.
Okay.
And so it's codified a lot of the case law. There's obviously case law that's developed around it, but it's quite a good way of looking at things. And I would suggest that it's a good standard to apply in terms of conduct and requirements that could be translated into a medical schemes environment. The challenge you have with a medical scheme is because there's nothing that deals really with governance in terms of the Act, and it's high level, it's very high level, so it's open to interpretation. I think the way, and that's actually one of the suggestions that I made in the talk, was one of the ways to deal with this gap is to actually look at amending your rules. So scheme rules typically cover things like benefits, and they cover eligibility, and they cover contributions, but the governance bit at the end is quite empty.
Mm.
And so actually one of the solutions that my presentation
okay.
dealt with was look at your rules and
okay.
tighten up the governance. Yes, there's model rules published by the Council for Medical Schemes. That's a guideline.
Yes.
You know, there's nothing stopping you from amplifying that's
adding
already
onto
there.
It and correct. Just making sure that there's some structures that we've thought of and put in place, because it's better to be prepared for different situations and different ways to go about things and have it written in writing, gone through many eyes. We thought about this and we added it in. That's actually a very, very great idea. That's a great idea.
I think it's just being practical. I think sometimes, you know, sometimes I think governance can sometimes be shrouded in mystery, and there's like, it feels like there's potions and cauldrons around it. And actually there shouldn't be. Governance is about being practical.
Okay.
It's doing the right thing and being seen to be doing the right thing.
Those
are, for me, that's always the principle.
Okay.
So regardless of, you know, what's right, what feels right, what looks like it should be right, especially when you're dealing with other stakeholders and their money, or their, in the case of a medical scheme, making sure there's sufficient funds to fund claims, so that you don't have a situation like with Health Squared, where beneficiaries are left high and dry, they've paid contributions through the years, and suddenly there's no money to actually pay their claims. And when they need it most, when they're lying in hospital or in ICU, it's those worst case scenarios. So governance is very much a situation about what's the right thing to do, but also perceiving it from a third party perspective and saying, how would a third party look at this? And what would they say if they had to look at this thing? What would they do? Yeah.
Okay. That's actually quite interesting. I mean, are there any particular things that someone would need to think about, particularly adding into that, into the scheme rules when it comes to that governance section? Like, what are the few high-level things that you'd say aren't typically included when we look at how people are running medical schemes now, but would be something that people should likely consider adding into those scheme rules?
Well, I think that if you look at, I'm just going to touch on some points, but I think that if you look at, you know, often there's provision made for trustees and how many trustees there are, and there's a repetition of what's in the Medical Schemes Act saying 50% must be member elected. But often what they don't think about, and that's part of what I spoke about, was board succession planning and the fact that, you know, you've got to, there's a balance that you have to achieve that King talks about, and that's about institutional memory. So institutional memory is understanding the business, knowing what's going on. Just because you've sat on another scheme as a trustee, or you've sat in a company, even from company to company or scheme to scheme, there's differences. So you have to actually learn about that specific environment, understand what the challenges are in that environment. So you need that institutional memory. But at the same time, what you need to guard against is you need to guard against same thing. And what happens in a corporate environment, and I say corporate as in terms of a body of people or group of people, they start getting the same thing. It's like anything in this, you know, in this world, you get lots of people that think the same. But if they can introduce fresh thinking and diversity and expertise, diversity of skill, expertise, diversity of cultures, it's all about perception and how things are perceived from third parties. So if you've got a bunch of people that keep looking at the same problem all the time from their perspective, they're never going to have a different perspective.
That's true.
And so that is what you've got to balance. So what I spoke about is how the rules actually start introducing a process that you rotate trustees on certain periods of time.
Okay.
That you give them tenure, that it's not just, you know, you say every trustee is in for 3 years, they're not eligible again, maybe for re-election for another 3 years. So you have that continuity, okay? And then you have to have a bit of a gap so that new people can come in. But at the same time, they should, so it's that balance between continuity and fresh thinking, and then making sure that you don't have the same people in there all the time, because I think that's a danger.
Okay. That's true. I think it's actually quite interesting, especially even in a general company, you know, everyone's excited to hear what the new person thinks of a problem, because it's always exciting to talk to the new people, even if it's something that's a bit more higher than the actual expertise. You like to go to someone and be like, hey, you just came here. What do you think of this problem? You know, just on a high level. And you get to see a different way of thinking in that person because they just came from a different environment. They just came from a different space. That's an amazing thing to add into like the board rules.
Yeah, I think the other thing that you have to think about is that I think you have a unique perspective because you're slightly younger. So if you have generational, I think there are generational dynamics that are introduced in it too. So what you tend to have is new people come into a board and they don't say something. They keep quiet for a long time because they feel intimidated by the rest of the people in the board that have more knowledge and expertise. So they tend to sit and don't say something for a long time. Now, if you think that a board is sitting, I'm not talking about committee meetings, and especially in a medical scheme, you've got ex gratia committees and other committees that sit more regularly. But you have probably four board meetings a year. So there's four times a year, every quarter, where people sit and they engage. And so a year goes very quickly.
That's
So 2 years
true.
go very quickly. That's why I think you need probably 3 to 5, terms, and then available for re-election for another term, and then a break, so that you don't have people in there all the time. Because sometimes what you have is the existing cohort know each other so well that the new person feels intimidated to
That makes
contribute.
sense.
And so what you should do, part of the other thing that I was suggesting, is that if you are rotating trustees, that you don't have everyone on and everyone off at the same time. So you have an existing board today. If everyone goes off today, then you're going to have no institutional memory and you
That
just got
is
new
very
people.
true.
So you almost have to stagger it, and you almost have to get your members to approve at AGM that while you kick it off, once it's going, then the cycle's happening. And then, everyone's at different stages and people are coming on and off the board at different stages. In addition to natural attrition, which happens when they resign, because they're just not available, or something happens that they no longer are able to continue to serve as trustees. So that you need to have that mix. It's that constant mix. But it is actually the interesting thing that I find about boards is it's a community. It's actually a community, and communities are stronger when they're diverse. And so you need that. You need the and also the skill. Accountants look at things differently from lawyers, that look at different things from doctors, that look at different things from actuaries. So you actually need that mixture to look at things from completely different
Completely
angles.
different angles,
And to think, the other thing that I found quite interesting about the BHF conference this year is a lot of speakers have spoken about how they've actually made improvements to their organization because they've looked at it differently. And a lot of them were triggered by COVID. And that was very interesting for me. So it's almost made sustainability, they've realized that sustainability requires change. And that change requires fresh thinking and thinking out of the box. And not necessarily just because we've done it like this since 1963, we need to
Doesn't mean you have
continue
to
doing it.
continue.
Correct.
That's amazing.
Correct.
And I like that you talk about how people who you're meeting at BHF talk about how things have changed because they've implemented things differently. And I would also like to say I was actually speaking to someone and she was saying she wants someone to come up and say they've been attending BHF for 10 years and these are the things that they've applied and have to their company and they've done differently because you're always getting these amazing talks. What in your perspective do you think is something that you would want someone to particularly take away and try to implement and in a sense and be able to come back and report possibly on the next BHF to say, oh, we listened to the talk and these are some things that we picked up and this is what we then went and implemented.
So I think there's for definitively from a governance perspective, I don't think anything is cast in stone, but I do think that there's a bit of a challenge in terms of, and it's actually something that I mentioned. I got a question about it during my presentation, was that the registrar issues model rules, and everyone's stuck in the modern rule, model rules, or the administrator that administer. You often see it. And it's just because I work across schemes and I also work across industry. So I see things, I believe that that makes it easier for me to see what's happening in different environments. Okay. So it's more apparent for me. But what you end up having is the administrators look at the rules okay, on because they're the experts, and that's why the schemes appoint them, especially in smaller schemes. You know, in bigger schemes, you have teams of people that are dedicated to that scheme to and that working scheme. Just on that scheme. But in smaller schemes, they're heavily reliant on the administrator. So it's not that the administrator's been doing the wrong thing, but the administrator kind of develops a set of rules and then applies them to the schemes. And then the schemes, the boards of trustees need to review it, but you don't necessarily have the expertise and the knowledge and the understanding from a medical schemes perspective when they're reviewing those rules. Sure. So they look at those rules and they go, oh, the benefits are covered, off the contributions are covered, you know, those basic things that everyone looks at. And no one looks at the governance things in more detail. I think it would be awesome, specifically given the fact that, I mean, the registrar is of the view that there are challenges from a governance perspective. Definitely with something like Health Squared, there must be, okay, because that's a governance failure. You know, however you slice and dice it, there's something there that, you know, where's the early warning system? But the fact of the matter is, at the end of the day, if people actually applied their mind to how things worked and perhaps looked at it from a different perspective and said, what would go wrong in my environment if I didn't have all these things in place? Because I find that I mean, obviously I'm an attorney, so people only call me when something's going wrong, you know.
Oh, sorry.
But it's the truth, okay? You're the fixer, okay? Fix my problem. But sometimes you can't fix the problem. And that's what people don't understand. So the question is, I have a different approach to even law. I don't believe it's about fixing the problem and litigation and trying to solve the problem when there's a problem. It's look at the thing proactively to avoid the problem. And will you cover everything? Never. And will you? So for me, it's not I've done it 1 year and 20 years later, I've got the same rules. You need to revise it constantly. Look at it constantly. Think of all the things. Tweak it. Amend it. Something will work. Next year, you've got a problem. That didn't work. Let's try to do something else. You know what I'm saying? And so you have to have that adaptability. So if anything, it would be great if trustees actually went and looked at their rules.
At their rules.
And didn't just go, well, these are the model rules, so that's okay.
Okay. That makes a lot of sense. So when we talk about the talk, you mentioned that there were two other approaches outside of the King approach.
Yeah.
That would be an easier way for medical schemes to actually implement this approach to governance. So you've already spoken about the rule amendment approach. What is the second approach that would be another, I guess, simple approach that?
Well, for me, I mean, everyone laughed when I put it up, but my view is test driving trustees. And I think you test drive a trustee, you don't buy a car before you drive it off the show, you know, just without driving off the show floor. You test drive it, okay, and you check. And because everything looks fantastic on paper, and how do you know if something works or not? So I've suggested that the other approach, and that's not a King approach, because the King version is go look at the pension fund supplement and see what it says about pension funds and then try and apply it there.
Okay. Yeah.
My view is that you should look at committees and bring in some of your members that are potentially member-elected trustees, and even your appointed trustees. Bring in people that are largely independent, so they're not trustees. They're from the member cohort, okay, appointed or elected. And then mix them up with some independents. Because what you have is you've got a transfer of knowledge and skill to those people. You then see how they operate in your committee environment.
Okay.
They get a bit of a, you know, you understand how they're performing. The members start understanding how they're performing. And hopefully, I mean, one of the King recommendations is obviously to bring awareness amongst your members about who they're appointing. So you're not just appointing populists, because that's the problem that you often have. Someone's such a nice person. So everyone, you know, is going to vote for them. But the person doesn't understand what's going on or doesn't necessarily have the skills or the capability to actually operate in that environment.
To take on that role.
Yeah. So you can use the committees to either, it's almost like a form of training, but it's a form of almost selection where you start going, this person has really performed well. We can support this person. You know, if this happens. And I think it will create awareness amongst members. So that's an alternate way of doing it. At the BHF, we've introduced a situation where we're allowing non-directors to sit on our boards, independents.
Okay.
And not only does it enrich the discussion,
okay,
but it means we're a representative organization. So what we want is we want representation, but it's not just the director. So directors are appointed on a representative basis, but this is the next level.
Mm.
And we're hoping that through that process, we can bring in people that have not necessarily been involved with the BHF, because being involved in a medical scheme or administrator or managed care organization doesn't necessarily mean that you understand what the BHF is about.
That's true.
Often in the industry, people get confused about what the BHF does. So what we found is that that's a great way to identify people that potentially could become directors. We've only just started it. You know, it's always baby steps with everything. Everyone thinks this thing is done immediately from day one and I am fully compliant. And, you know, and I think people need to be patient about it. It's a process. It's a journey, not a destination.
Journey, not a destination. Given that you're talking about something you've actually test-driven, what was the reception at BHF for people to actually take on this approach? What was the reception on that side? So that medical schemes can get an idea of what it would look like if they both try to bring this up into their governance.
Well, I didn't have many questions, probably because I was just before lunch. But the engagement that I did have from a few people is they said, sure, that's very interesting. They've never thought of that before. In fact, none of the governance professionals said to me, it's a different way of doing it. Yeah. So for me, it's about being practical. I'm a practical person. It's not about, there's theory, but there's the practical and what works. So try things out. I think sometimes we're also so stuck on being right every time. You're going to make mistakes. You're going to have to pull back perhaps a little bit. It's okay. You're trying something out to see if it works and slowly you adapt it. It's like baking a cake, you know, you need to adjust the recipe sometimes, but eventually you're going to get to the right cake. So those are the kind of things that I just think, you know, people mustn't be afraid of doing it. But overall, I mean, you know, everyone I've spoken to told me my presentation was good, but I think it was too short.
So I don't know if there's any other things you'd like to talk about, if there's any way you'd like to wrap up this conversation. Final words, final thoughts?
I would just say that, you know, governance is not, it's not just rules-based and like laws-based,
okay, if
that makes sense. A lot of it is common sense and a lot of it is being practical and trying things out. You know, if you can demonstrate that what you've done, what the intention of what you're doing, or the intended consequence, there are always unintended consequences. But if you intended to do something in a certain way and you were acting in good faith, that's great. And I think that nothing is going to evolve in this industry from a governance perspective unless people are willing to try different ways of doing things and thinking out of the box. It's almost like innovation in governance.
Okay.
And I think it's important that people try things out.
Amazing stuff. Thank you so much for actually joining us. I learned a lot and you really did. When we were talking before the interview started, she told me that people see governance as something that's very woohoo. And once you put it down as it's simply just common sense and just being practical, and I've personally learned so much and I've personally gotten so much from this conversation, and I'm genuinely hoping that anyone listening out there would be able to even like implement this in the different spaces where they're actually working. I think those are like very different ideas from what I've heard and different suggestions, but they make so much sense. And as you were speaking, I understood what you meant by practicality and common sense. That's all it is. And so thank you so much for joining us, and I hope you enjoy the rest of the BHF conference.
Thank you. And I would just say to members of the BHF that we have a governance committee within the BHF environment that is now focusing on assisting members with governance. So if you have issues or challenges, you're paying BHF membership levies, reach out to the BHF. That's what it's there for, to assist members.
That's incredible. Well, thank you so much.
Thank you.